are so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Show, Western Canada's only radio program and podcast on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is CFRO 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada, on December 28th, 2018. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen Dobell, and I'm joined in studio by my co-host, Carol Davies McIntosh.
Season's greetings, everyone.
On today's show, we will discuss how and why to go vegan for the new year. You may or may not have heard the term Veganuary, but it's what we vegans call the time of year when people make a dedication to transition to a more compassionate lifestyle by going vegan, at what is traditionally a time of year when people make New Year's resolutions to become healthier and more conscious beings. We will have two feature interviews, one with a recent graduate of Boucher Institute of Naturopathic Medicine, Matthew Nagra, who will discuss with us how easy it is to go vegan and why it's considered the healthiest diet. He will give us a breakdown of all the common nutritional questions asked by non-vegans, as well as offer some tips and resources for people who want information on transitioning to a more compassionate, healthy lifestyle. We'll also speak with Alexander Brigham, co-owner of Vancouver's Eternal Abundance, an all-vegan, all-organic grocery store and cafe, as well as a community meeting space for events and classes, seminars on living a more compassionate lifestyle. Let's hear Alexander's interview now. In honor of our annual Veganuary show, we are speaking with a co-owner of Commercial Drive's Eternal Abundance, all-organic, all-vegan grocery store and cafe, Alexander Brigham. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
So I'm having you on the show today because it's our annual Veganuary show, which you might not know about, but we do this every year in preparation for all those people out there that have been wanting to get on this vegan bandwagon. So let's hear your vegan story.
Sure. Well, looking at the calendar, it's been almost 12 years now that I've been vegan. It first started when a roommate that I was living with in 2006, she was vegetarian, and we were cooking meals together, sharing food, and just one day I was like, oh, you know what? I noticed that the only thing that I'm, at the odd time I'd be buying some deli meats or something from Safeway, but I noticed that I was really enjoying what I was eating with her. I felt fine. Everything tasted good. And I was also actually saving money, like all these myths around things not tasting good and being or not being good for you or being very expensive. So about a month after I went vegetarian, I was in school at UBC. I did a presentation on factory farming and talking about like pollution and water contamination and antibiotic resistance and all these things that come around factory farms. And I remember announcing that I was glad that I'd just went vegetarian because having learned all this information, I couldn't keep eating meat and participating in that. Then I went away for a year and came back and found that the same roommate had since went vegan. And I was like, oh, that's kind of okay. Like that's interesting. I never really thought about that, but that seems like a logical step. And I'll try it for a week. So yeah, that was early 2007. And just the more that I learned about veganism, like the ethical reasons, the environmental reasons, the personal health reasons, and also like the human reasons, I guess you'd say, like not wanting to pay somebody or force somebody to do a job to kill an animal when I couldn't bring it to do it myself. Anyways, the more the reasons that I learned about, the more it only made sense, and the more that I felt like I couldn't be complicit in a system that I disagreed with. So I felt that, you know, if you can thrive and do less harm, you know, isn't something that people are morally obligated to do. So, yeah, that was 12 years ago.
That's amazing. And tell us about Eternal Abundance. When did you start this grocery store cafe, and what was the inspiration behind it?
Well, Eternal Abundance was actually started by a gentleman from Toronto. I believe he had two locations out there. They weren't vegan, but they were all organic, which we also are here now in East Van. I think it just so happened that when he just installed a grocery store, and then there was a local chef who then teamed up with him and built a small cafe, and the cafe was all vegan. Anyways, I joined the team in 2011, almost 8 years coming up. And so Eternal Abundance, when you come in, it might be a little confusing because there's lots of things going on. There's a grocery store and there's also a cafe all under one roof. Our goal is to offer vegan fare that's tasty and nutritious, contains as many locally sourced ingredients from small local businesses and farms as possible. And we also try to focus on zero waste. So for instance, we have a jar deposit program. We pay $1 for a jar of any of the ingredients or spices or even smoothies that you purchase, and you return the jar and we'll eventually refill it with something else. We try to keep our prices low so that people can extend more of their hard-earned dollars towards organics for their own health and that of the environment and wildlife and farm workers. One thing that we've also done, we did a little bit more in the past than we do at present, is that we also, try to provide education so people can learn about vegan living via cooking classes and health talks. And we've also hosted talks and screenings around issues of social justice, animal rights, and environmental issues.
I love that. It is the most soulful place. I mean, not even because of all these things that you've just said go on there, but even the feel of Eternal Abundance, it feels like a very homey place when you walk in there for the first time. I just love it.
Yeah, we're trying to provide a real community space.
It is, and of course, Commercial Drive in itself has that vibe as well, so it's just a perfect place for that. And what I also love is coming to your store in the springtime, because you've got West Coast seeds, and you have outside all the little organic seedlings for the garden. I just love going there. And the bookshelf, of course, is probably my favorite part of your store. But unfortunately, you've been broken into a lot lately and could use a little support from the community that you give so much back to. So let's talk about that. How many times have you been broken into lately?
Twice. So once in mid-November and again on solstice on the 21st of December.
Wow.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not something that was done against us. It was just somebody was looking for some money, and they found a little bit the first time, and they tried to come back the second time and find it again. We've tightened up our security measures a lot, but it's still it's not so much the cash that was found, but just the impact of the broken glass and the till drawers. And plus, of course, it's just a little bit traumatizing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's actually been, we've had a big outpouring from our community of customers. So while it's been disheartening and kind of discouraging, we've been felt quite uplifted. We've had people just giving us cash donations, saying that they're going to come by more frequently. We've even had people call in or even email or Facebook message with words of support and condolences, people that we've never even met, but we've just, they've heard about it and they're saying, it sounds like you're such a great little place. And I just want to offer my, my condolences to what happened and let you know that I'm going to come in with three of my friends who have also never been there. We'll come for lunch next week.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, it's been, and even a few of our vegan business friends, who have, Willow's Wax Bar, she donated part of her sales for the day. Vegan Pudding gave us a bunch of product that we could then sell. I've been on the verge of tears a couple times because of all the support.
The vegan community is quite helpful, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
know,
another reason for people who are listening today in the hopes of going vegan for Veganuary, there is so much more coming to you than you even know about. And my whole friend circle changed since going vegan. I just love hanging out with people that are totally dedicated to making the world a better place. And don't you find that you're surrounded by those types as well now?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, most of our staff are vegan, so they kind of get it. A lot of the customers, actually it's surprising, a lot of the customers, some of them don't know that we're vegan. I think they're there for, they maybe see the organic side of it or the gluten-free side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just so happens to be that it's vegan. So, but yeah, we've had a lot of support. It's been very uplifting.
That's great. Well, I'm not sure if you know, but I work for a local filmmaker, Gary Charbonneau, and years ago you generously let us use your space for a screening of his documentary, which I appreciated because it was really tough to find a space that wasn't charging an arm and a leg for nonprofit people like us. The documentary was Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, and I've also attended many events and screenings at your shop, all of which have expanded my mind on a variety of topics relating to being a more conscious human being, very soul-fulfilling events. I especially remember bringing a first date to one of your events put on by local nutritionist and dietitian Vicento Molina. I don't know if you were there that night. It was a couple years ago.
I think I remember talking to you about it.
Okay, and he wasn't that interested until she brought up erectile dysfunction being a disease of diet and clogged arteries, and he at that point decided he was going to go vegan. Yeah. So can you tell our listeners about some of the events you had in the past and some of the upcoming ones that are kind of exciting and have been really popular?
Well, we see there's a lot of information or a lot of things going on that we think are unjust, like cetaceans being kept in, you know, small tanks and the kind of torture of that, like Gary showed in the documentary. Things that need to come to light and need to be shared, and don't, you know, they have a lot of personal energy and expense put into them, and they don't expect a lot out of them. So if we can provide that venue for these screenings, and it's something that gets the word out there, and it also takes a little bit of pressure off of the filmmaker, in terms of finances. Then we're all about like sharing that. We're not just about selling food. We're about providing information to people, and also nourishing people with, you know, vegan food. We want to educate around health, animal welfare, environment. Like you said, we've hosted Vicento, the local vegan dietitian. We've done documentary screenings with local animal advocate filmmakers like Gary. We've done like book signings around like urban farming and the importance of local food. And of course, we do some kind of maybe more lighthearted things, like just putting on like special events. Like we've got New Year's brunch coming up, and we also do cooking classes. So just early December, we did like a festive holiday cookie class. And then in this coming January, I think mid-January, we're hosting like a quick power bar snack class.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Do you happen to recall off the top of your head what's on your New Year's brunch menu?
Oh, yeah. So we're doing, I believe it's like, there's kind of two entrees that are going to be on. One of them is going to be a tempeh hash, so that'll be with the tempeh, like the local tempeh makers, tempeh. And then there's going to be waffles, like a berry compote and a chocolate mousse and a cashew sauce.
Sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're excited. Last year was the first year that we did New Year's, and we had a really good turnout. And it was a lot of fun, so it's a fun day.
Well, it's too bad we're having you on after Christmas. I should have had you on before because I really like to send people to your shop to buy gifts.
Right.
But year-round, we're buying gifts for people. And I just like to talk about all the interesting items, such as vegan cookbooks, homemade seed crackers, packets of seeds for the garden in the summer, the organic seedlings that I mentioned earlier, and jars of really unique spices and herbs from around the world that I'd never heard of. And when you read the little description on them, they're healthy for you in so many ways that I've never heard of these things. So can you tell us a little bit about how you acquire some of these interesting spices and herbs from around the world?
Well, I was finding going into other stores that sometimes you would find a few organic spices here and there, but there wasn't really like a large array. I like to cook. I mean, I don't really have so much, or I don't put so much time into it, but I do like to cook when I get the chance, and I'm always curious about like different cultures' foods. And that was actually one thing about turning vegan is that suddenly, you know, you can't just go and have a burger or eat like from the regular menu at White Spot or something, for instance. So when you're eating out, you're forced to look and say, okay, what other things can I eat? And so you're exposed to, like, you know, the wide array of vegan Indian foods and, like, Ethiopian food, all these different cultures that have different spices. So anyways, kind of tying that together with the small array of organic spices out there, I started to look. So kind of my dream was, like, to have, like, a wall of spices. And that's essentially what we have now. So, I mean, first thing, we try to source things locally. And when that's not available, because, all you know, spices, a lot of them grow in hot climates. There's a small family spice company on the Gulf Islands called Gathering Place Trading, and they purchase directly from organic farm cooperatives in India. So they're really fresh. They give them a fair price. And they also, they travel there, I think, once a year or once every 2 years to meet, to see how the operations are going and to kind of build those relationships. So, yeah, that's generally where we try to get those from.
That's awesome. And can you tell us, what are the most popular menu items in your cafe?
Oh, yeah. So we have a couple dishes, but the main one is probably, we have this big, it's like part salad, part grain, and part warm veggies. It's called the Incredible. So it's like a big hearty salad with a nice dressing, some freshly sliced veggies, avocado, and it comes with a choice of either like tofu or warm roasted veggies. We also do a lot of green juices and smoothies, and the menu actually focuses mainly on raw, but we realize that, you know, with the cold weather, people want to eat soups or just like ground stews and salads. Mm-hmm. But we also do a lot of raw foods.
Yeah, it's really healthy. It's a rainbow of color in your plate mm-hmm. when you go there. I'm really impressed.
Yeah.
So for our listeners who plan to go vegan this Veganuary, why is Eternal Abundance a great place to start on the vegan journey?
Yeah. Well, I think because we have, depending on where you're at, like if you're a little bit knowledgeable about vegan foods, you can buy some groceries and take them home, make something. If not, you can just come in and like enjoy in-house like what we have to offer, like knowing that everything we have is vegan.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, because the entire store is vegan, you can just kind of like walk in and look around and be like, okay, you know, they've put out what I can eat or what I should eat. And we also have, I mean, most of the staff are vegan, so you can ask questions if you're curious about things. We also have a lot of books, like by local dietitian Vicente Molina, where she breaks it all down. Like, it's not just, here's some recipes, make these things, but like she comes from a dietitian's perspective, like talking about fats, protein, carbohydrates, kind of the basic, you know, building blocks of like the macronutrients of what you're going to consume.
Mm-hmm.
So she talks about nutrition from like a scientific perspective, but then she also provides recipes and shows, you know, dispels the myths around flavor and nutrition.
I love her book for a new vegan because I feel like it leaves no stone unturned when it comes to the questions that new vegans have and things that they're worried about, such as getting the right amount of nutrients. She even has these charts where you can look at your age and your weight and your gender and what number of nutrients you need, how many grams of protein and all the rest of it. And it really does prove that we've been brainwashed to think that we need much more protein than we do. And in fact, having an excess of protein is leading to a number of our human diseases that are causing death in us. So it's such a great book. I recommend it to anyone who wants to go vegan or even anyone who just wants to be healthy. It's just all in one place what you need. Is she coming to do any more talks at your shop?
Not for the time being. We were talking the last couple of weeks about possibly doing something in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have a solid date yet.
Okay. I know she's really busy doing all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah, she's all over the place.
Yeah.
Literally all over the world.
I actually ran into her at an airport. We were on our way to the animal rights conference 2 years
ago.
Wow. And there she was with her husband, and we ended up sharing a cab.
Yeah, nice.
Can you tell our listeners how they can stay up to date with Eternal Abundance's events and how they can give you a little extra support that you need right now after these break-ins?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. So probably the best way to stay up to date is if you're online, which I think most people are, just to, you know, follow us on Instagram, like us on Facebook. We're also going to be starting up an email list where we'll be sending out like a monthly blast of upcoming events, specials, you know, cafe highlights, things like that. The best way to come in and support us is just, you know, come to the shop. Don't just come on your own, but maybe bring a friend or bring somebody who's never been there. And, you know, just pick up some treats or groceries. We also have an online store where you can purchase our non-perishable items, and we can ship it to you. We also deliver via Skip the Dishes. And the final thing, I guess, especially pertinent to the break-in, was that we have a GoFundMe. And I think, Jen, you're going to put that on the website.
I will.
We've got a GoFundMe where people can go and donate. And we really appreciate that because it's probably, when the dust settles, it's probably going to be close to $3,000 for the recovery from the two break-ins.
Oh, wow. Okay. We will try to get you some help. And one more thing, just that New Year's brunch again. Do you want to just give the details of that, the cost and the time?
Sure. Yeah, so we'll be open on January 1st from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. We're going to have two entrees, one of them being a waffle dish, and the other one is going to be a tempeh hash with, I think, some like roasted potatoes and sauteed greens. And then, yeah, we'll have our regular, all our desserts available and some juices available and things like that.
Such a great way to start off the first day of the new year. Come on down and have a healthy meal and then do your grocery shop for your new resolution to be vegan and healthy.
Yes.
And maybe go have a polar bear swim. I don't know. Whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
No, thank you.
Somebody else can do that for me.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. And everyone, go check out Eternal Abundance at Commercial. And what is the cross street there?
Parker.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
We're at 1025 Commercial.
All right. We'll see you soon.
Okay.
Thanks Alexandra.
Jen.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay.
The Culch presents the East Van Panto, Wizard of Oz. When a pipeline bursts, Dorothy and Toto are flung to the magical land of Oz, aka Hastings and Nanaimo. There, Dorothy is pursued by a wicked witch, meets a trio of new friends, and embarks on a magical journey to the world's greenest city, in search of brains, heart, courage, and yoga pants. Back for its sixth year, the East Van Panto runs at the York Theatre from November 28th to January 6th. Tickets start at $10. For more information and to get your tickets, head to theculch.com.
You are listening to Animal Voices Radio on CFRO Co-op 100.5 FM.
Welcome to the show, Matthew.
Thank you.
So today we're speaking with Matthew Negra from Vancouver. He's a recent graduate of Boucher Naturopathic Medicine, hasn't registered yet and is not practicing yet, but will be soon. And yeah, congratulations on passing that very, very challenging program, by the way.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a long haul.
Yeah, no wonder you're taking some time to travel before you start working.
Yeah.
So let's hear about you. How long have you been vegan and what led to this lifestyle transformation?
I've actually been vegan for almost 8 years. It'll be 8 years in February. And to make a long story short, when I was 16, I had a personal trainer. I was playing soccer and football and a whole bunch of other sports. And he actually really pushed more of like a plant-based diet and a lot of raw foods and things like that. I never really took his advice too seriously until one day he made me do a food diary for like 2 weeks. And I was just so scared that they were going to see how crappy my diet was and just really kick my ass in the gym. So I decided for these 2 weeks I'm going to cut all the dairy, cut all the junk foods, and I realized that I just felt better. So after that 2 weeks, I continued with it. I haven't had any dairy since. And over the next 2 years, as I learned more and more about plant-based living and how healthy it can be, I eventually made the switch to 100% when I was in my first year of university in 2011.
That's awesome. I've been there with the food diary and the trainer. It does make you think, oh no, I have to eat healthy just because I don't want to have to be honest about what I'm really eating.
100%. I felt bad about it. It was a lot of McDonald's and stuff like that.
It's funny you say that. I remember my trainer bumping into me as I was coming out of McDonald's one day, and I would never go to McDonald's. It was just this one-time crazy craving I had, and I thought, of all times to run into my trainer, are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, that's just bad luck.
So you recently graduated from a very comprehensive course at Boucher Naturopathic Medicine in our college in New Westminster. What inspired you to take this course?
Well, actually, one thing I didn't mention was when I was younger, I had asthma, and at some points it did get very bad to the point where the doctor actually even told my parents that I may die. So it was pretty severe, and since I made those changes back when I was 16, so like 10 years ago now, I haven't had an attack since. And so I saw what lifestyle intervention or just changing my own lifestyle can do for me. So I wanted to do that for other people as well. And around that same time when I was 16, my dad had some heart issues as well. And it wasn't until he started changing his diet up himself and he was seeing not a naturopathic doctor, but a medical doctor who practices integrative medicine. And that's kind of when I noticed him getting better as well. So I wanted to follow suit in that sort of realm of alternative medicine.
Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, my sister had asthma so badly that she was near death many times. I would wake up in the middle of the night and my parents would be gone and I would just know they were at the hospital with Shannon. She had so many allergies. I remember we shared a bedroom and she would keep me up at night scratching her hives, and she would have blood on the sheets every morning from all the hives that were that she'd scratched to death all night long. And we did go, we lived in Victoria, but we would go on trips to Vancouver to see specialists and naturopaths. And, you know, it was probably the dairy. And I don't think that we ever eliminated dairy for her.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I actually don't know of too much research in the realm of dairy and allergies and asthma. There's definitely some, but it's not, there aren't like these massive studies that we know 100% it has that effect. But I see it all the time with people once they eliminate the dairy. Things like allergies and hives and asthma all seem to improve.
And migraines. I work as a massage therapist, and a lot of people get rid of their migraines by going off the dairy. Mm-hmm. It's I'm really grateful that you went into this field, and as you've been told by me, I have a list of people I'm wanting to send to you when you finally decide where you're setting up.
Yeah, one day.
So the reason I'm having you on our show today is because we're celebrating Veganuary, and we do this every year, and we try to gear this show towards those people who have thought about going vegan. It is a booming trend at the moment, and I'm hoping that it is something that is beyond a trend and something that people choose to stick with, because we are encountering pretty scary times right now environmentally, and of course we have a health epidemic where a lot of our diseases that are taking our lives are based in diet, and of course you know these things. And so let's talk about some of the most common questions new vegans might have about certain nutrients. These are questions that you and I as vegans get all the time, and we're pretty well versed in answering them. But for new people, what can you say to them about some of the most common concerns, such as protein? Let's begin with that one.
Well, protein is kind of the classic one that we always get. And there, like, I will never, for as long as I practice, meet somebody in Canada or United States or wherever I go who has a protein deficiency. It just doesn't happen in Western cultures. And that's because we don't die from diseases of deficiency here in North America. We die from deficiencies of excess. People are eating so much protein and fat and carbs and just calories in general, right? And so the requirements for protein are actually much lower than most people believe. For the average person, it's about 0.8 grams per kilogram. If you're an athlete, you can bump that up to like 1.2. And for the elderly, because of potential muscle wasting and everything, you may want to go even a little bit higher to 1.5 grams per kilogram, which that gets to the area of maybe you got to take a little more care and make sure you're eating your beans and legumes and, you know, tofu and whole grains and all your greens. But for someone eating 0.8 to 1.2 grams per kilogram, which is the vast majority of the population, that's very easy to get as long as you're eating enough calories, because all whole foods contain protein. Mm-hmm. Watermelon has protein. Bananas have protein. All your greens and your mushrooms I was having in my salad last night, they've all got protein in them, and just in varying amounts. And now if you are concerned about protein intake, increase your bean consumption if you want, or make sure you're having your greens every day. But it shouldn't really be a concern. And now we've got more and more people adopting plant-based diets who are elite athletes. Like Kendrick Ferris is the only USA Olympic weightlifter to compete at the last Summer Games, and he was vegan, right? The only person in America who was strong enough to compete at the Olympics was vegan. Patrick Baboumian, world record holder, he's also vegan. And then you've got just tons of endurance athletes, like half of the NBA now, it seems like. So there really shouldn't be these concerns that we're seeing. And I think a lot of those concerns will be squashed with the upcoming documentary, The Game Changers, which I was fortunate enough to see in September. And I actually wanted to see it again the next day because it was so good. It's my favorite documentary on plant-based diets to date. And I believe they're looking at a February release date, but they haven't announced it yet.
I am so looking forward to that. It was supposed to come out in October. I've emailed them to find out when it's coming out. I work in a sports clinic. I can't tell you how many people I'm planning on sending this documentary to.
Yeah, it's like they make veganism cool, you know, like they make it attainable and they don't make it preachy. Like it was very, very well done.
That's awesome. Well, now let's move on to some other nutrients. Let's talk about calcium, because when people think calcium, what do they typically think?
Yeah, they all think about, you know, brittle bones and how you need calcium for bone health, which is absolutely true. But the thought of because somebody's vegan, them being deficient in it, that's just not true. If we look at dietary intake studies, so studies on what people are actually eating day to day, and you compare an omnivorous diet, so a non-vegan diet, to a vegan diet, you find that both groups are deficient in calcium and iodine intake. So it's not just a vegan problem. And on top of that, the vegans are lower in B12 intake, obviously, but the omnivorous group is also low in folate, fiber, magnesium, vitamin C, and vitamin E. So they're actually the ones eating the more deficient diet.
Wow.
That doesn't mean that we shouldn't care about calcium intake. The Epic Oxford study, which is one of the biggest epidemiological studies in the world, I believe it had about 70,000 people, and they found that for those vegans eating over 600 milligrams of calcium per day, which is just over half of what is really recommended, there was no increase in fracture risk. So that's very, very easy to obtain if you're eating your greens and your broccoli and your even a lot of plant milks now are fortified, like soy milk and almond milk and all that, and eating your legumes as well. So it shouldn't be that much of an issue to get. And it's also important to note that calcium in kale or broccoli is absorbed almost twice as well as the calcium in milk.
I didn't know that. I knew it had calcium, but I didn't know it was absorbed well. So that's great.
Yeah. Now moving on to iron. You want to do that?
Well, can we back up for 1 minute?
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about people who are getting their calcium from dairy milk. What do you say about that?
Well, like I mentioned, it isn't absorbed as well. And what I want to focus on with food, because you can see a benefit in just about any kind of food. If you look at, say, grass-fed animal products like meat or whatever, you'll notice that they have higher levels of omega-3s, right? That doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing, because food is a package deal. You don't get the calcium in the milk without the saturated fat and the casein and all that. You don't get the omega-3s from your grass-fed beef without all the heme iron and cholesterol and saturated fat and the new 5-GC, which is an inflammatory molecule. So you have to look at it as a package. You can't pick and choose. It's not like a supplement.
Right. I like how you said that. That is absolutely true. Why not just go to something that is cancer-fighting and has the nutrients that you need that are absorbed twice as well than going for the saturated fat, cholesterol-laden foods that we know are causing disease?
Exactly.
Okay, now iron. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, iron is one of the more common concerns once you get past the protein and B12. And with iron, about 1 in 7 women of menstruating age are iron deficient. Anemic. That's unfortunate, but the risk is no higher in vegans. It's the same. So it's not a vegan problem, but it is a big problem. And vegans actually consume more iron than do non-vegans, but it's generally a different kind, right? When you're eating iron from animal products, you're getting what's called heme iron, which is pretty much absorbed regardless of whether you need it or not. And the non-heme iron, the absorption is variable. So if you need it, if you're low on it, your body will upregulate absorption. If you have too much of it, your body will downregulate absorption, because iron's a double-edged sword, and it's very oxidative. If you get too much of it, it's linked to colorectal cancer, especially heme iron. But if you are on the lower end and you want to boost your absorption, you can always eat it with vitamin C, which is something I recommend. So eating it with some like oranges or other citrus fruits. And you also want to be careful to eat too much iron with a lot of calcium as well, because they're going to compete for absorption. So you may end up more deficient in one or the other.
That's interesting. How about omegas?
Yeah, I eat a tablespoon of ground flax seeds every day in my oatmeal in the morning. And omega-3s, there's been a lot of research on heart health, stating that you should be taking fish oils for your heart and everything, but the biggest studies on the topic actually show that there are no benefits. Mind you, there's a lot of controversy over those studies as well, because they're saying that the dosage that they used was too low or other things like that. So Jury's a little bit out on the whole heart health aspect, but for brain health, the DHA, which is converted in our bodies from ALA to EPA, then to DHA, that has actually been shown to be pretty good for your brain health, especially throughout pregnancy for development of the fetal nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
So I recommend taking 1 tablespoon of ground flax, 1 to 2 tablespoons every day. Other sources are walnuts or chia seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are pregnant, definitely take a algae-based DHA supplement. Or if you just want to ensure that you maintain good cognitive health, because there really aren't any downsides, even if the research isn't super clear yet, that's a good insurance policy to have as well.
Mm-hmm. And with the flax, it is recommended to have that ground, correct?
Yeah, you need a ground. If you have it whole, you're not actually going to break it down and absorb it.
I wouldn't think so. Okay, now let's talk about vitamin D.
Yeah, so naturally we get vitamin D from the sun, but living up here in Canada, that's not really an option for most of the year. So what I recommend is taking 2,000 IU of a vitamin D3 supplement per day. Now, you can take vitamin D2 as well, which is plant-derived. It's from, you know, mushrooms. But you just have to take a higher dose. I believe it's double the dose. But now we have vegan versions of vitamin D3. So that's also important to note, that if you do go to a health food store, you want to pick up some vitamin D3, that you want to make sure it is a vegan variety, because if it doesn't mention that, it's probably from like sheep's wool or something like that.
Okay.
It's also good to note that a lot of dairy products that contain vitamin D are actually fortified with vitamin D, because they don't contain very much themselves.
Good to know. And do you take a daily vitamin? What do you recommend for people?
I'm like the worst with supplements. I'm pretty lazy with a lot of it. So I actually take higher doses of the vitamin D. I have like a 5,000 IU supplement that I take every like 2-3 days.
Okay. I'm always forgetting my vitamin D drops. I have them and I need to do
that. It just makes it easier for me if I do that. Same with like B12. I take a higher dose than I recommend. And,
mm-hmm.
It keeps me on the program.
Well, let's talk about B12. So like I said, we're gearing this show today toward people who really don't know much about these things, but we do hear non-vegans say, well, where do you guys are all deficient in your B12, you vegans. So where do they think they're getting their B12, and where should we be getting that from?
So B12, which is something you'll find in animal products, is definitely something that's deficient in most vegan diets. But it's not because the vegan diet doesn't supply it. It's because of the way that we practice sanitation now. So B12 isn't made by animals, by bacteria. And that bacteria, they're in the soil from the plants that we're eating. They're in the water. They're in our guts, actually, but we don't absorb it because it's too far down in our digestive tract. So because we treat our water now to kill all the bacteria so we don't get like cholera or E. coli or anything like that, and because we do wash all our vegetables religiously really at this point, then we need to supplement it to make sure we're getting it into our diet. So the recommendations for cyanocobalamin, which is the most common form, is 250 micrograms per day or 2,500 once per week. And so if you're not eating any animal products, I'd say non-negotiable. You need to be taking your B12. You can get some fortified products like plant milks or cereals or nutritional yeast, but it's super cheap, super easy, so why risk it? Just take a supplement, and it makes it really easy. A lot of animals that people are eating now are getting their B12 from supplemental sources in the feed that they're getting, or even by injections in some cases.
That's true. So what an indirect way to be getting a nutrient, to have to supplement an animal and then to eat the animal.
Exactly. And then people view that as more natural, but really it's not.
Mm-hmm. So in your opinion, as a naturopath, or I shouldn't call you a naturopath yet, but you've passed your board exams and you're waiting to be registered. We should be careful here. Is it healthier to obtain these nutrients from a vegan diet or from an animal-based diet? And please elaborate on your answer.
Yeah, so like I mentioned, food's a package deal, right? So with most animal products, there are some serious downsides there, especially if you're consuming them on a regular basis. So I definitely recommend plant foods, whole plant foods. So just saying a vegan diet isn't good enough, because that just means that you don't eat animal products. You can be eating anything else, right? You can be having Oreos, potato chips and whatever.
Right. Yeah. Junk food vegan. You don't have to, we should make that distinction. So if you're eating a whole food plant-based diet versus an animal-based diet.
Yeah. And with foods, like there's a lot of synergy that goes on. So, this morning I was looking at some research on brain health, cognitive function, and anthocyanidins, which are molecules in blueberries. And they found that when people ate the blueberries, they actually had better cognitive function, but when they supplemented them with just the anthocyanidins, they didn't.
Wow.
There's all of this synergy going on, all the different nutrients work together. Just like if you eat food with fiber, like a fruit, your blood sugar is not going to spike like it would with if you're having just pure sugar. But if you take a bunch of sugar and eat it with some fiber, your blood sugar is still going to spike because there's a lot of other things missing in there.
Mm-hmm. So for people who have no idea where to begin when it comes to meal planning, can you offer some essential items to have on one's grocery shopping list if they are planning to go vegan for Veganuary?
So I don't like to tell people specifically what to eat because everybody does have different tastes and they, they're going to gravitate towards different things. Plus, I eat a very simple diet myself that maybe other people won't like as much. But I will mention categories that you should look for. So definitely beans, have some kind of beans or lentils or chickpeas, something in that family, whatever it is that you like, as well as some whole grains. My choice is oats I have every morning, but you got your rice, your quinoa, millet, sorghum, farro. You got tons of options there, and you'll probably discover some new ones you never heard of before. Have some fruits for sure every day. Your veggies, especially greens. Greens you should be having every day, and if you take Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn's advice, who was one of the first people, one of the only people to show that we can reverse heart disease, he recommends 5 times per day having your greens. Like he makes his patients eat like a midnight snack of kale. You know what I mean? So definitely have some greens in there.
Wow.
And some nuts or seeds for snacking on would be good, as well as the ground flax, like I mentioned. And then your vitamin B12, vitamin D3, and an algae-based DHA supplement with a dose of about 250 milligrams per day. And really what I'm mentioning here is Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen. So if you want a good free app for your iPhone or Android, it's called Dr. Greger's Daily Dozen, and it basically has a bunch of tick boxes where you try to eat the different food groups every single day and try to check them all off, which is actually hard to do. But if you're getting all or most of those every single day, you're eating a very healthy diet. So I definitely recommend that as a good free resource.
That's great. I do love Dr. Michael Greger. And for anyone who doesn't know who we're talking about, check out the website nutritionfacts.org and make that a website that you just go to daily and you watch one of the recent videos. So now that we've talked about what people can have in their shopping list, let's talk about some favorite nutrient-dense meal ideas for breakfast, lunch, and dinner for those who have no idea how to get off their bacon and eggs and their steak dinners.
So like I mentioned before, I'm not the best person to ask for this kind of stuff because I eat so simply and might not be everybody's favorite type of meal plan, but I'll just kind of walk you through a day for me. I have oatmeal in the morning with steel-cut oats. I throw ground flaxseed on there, a bunch of frozen berries, which I cook in with all the oats, and then it kind of liquefies and adds a lot of good flavor. I throw in some amla powder, which is gooseberry, the most high antioxidant food in the world. This might gross people out, but I throw a bit of turmeric in there, just enough that I don't taste it, but I know it's really good for me. And sometimes I'll throw in some walnuts as well.
Okay, that's pretty much my breakfast right there. Maybe I'll try the turmeric. How much do you put in?
I don't know. I just, like, sprinkle some on there enough that I'm not going to taste it, but, like, maybe a quarter teaspoon or something. But okay. I eat, like, a big batch of oatmeal.
Okay, sounds good.
And then for lunch, it varies. Sometimes I'll honestly just have a fruit meal, like a whole bunch of persimmons I've been doing lately because I was traveling all the way for a while, so I missed most of persimmon season, and I love that fruit. Or I'll do some kind of like rice and bean type dish with some veggies. And then for dinner, my favorite one is actually a really big salad I make with steamed kale, steamed broccoli. Sometimes I'll throw in some other greens like spring mix or romaine. And then I'll throw in some mushrooms, kind of whatever other veggies I'm feeling, sweet potatoes, and beans. I can't remember if I already mentioned that. And then I will make my own dressing, which is just three ingredients. I put in cherry tomatoes, avocado, and cayenne, so it makes it spicy. And if you want, you know, I throw in some other stuff here or there as well. But that's kind of the basic day-to-day for me.
Great. So that's really easy to do, and it sounds really inexpensive compared to a non-vegan diet, right?
Yeah. I think vegan diets really only get expensive if you're eating out a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I really want to talk to you about today is something that I can't believe we still have to teach people about, the harms of the keto diet. This is still a really big trend.
Yeah, and actually I'd say it's a fairly new trend compared to like paleo or even going as far back as Atkins. So what a ketogenic diet is, for the listeners, is a very high-fat, very low-carb, and low-protein diet that is actually designed for children with epilepsy, because they found that they can't metabolize sugar properly in the brain, so this kind of bypasses it by putting your body into ketosis, breaking down the fats, and using that as fuel. So it's used because it delays the use of medications in these children, and the side effects of the diet are not as bad as the side effects of the medication. But that's not to say that it's safe. Like, in the short term, yeah, you'll maybe lose some weight, maybe you'll get some mental clarity, but, I mean, switching from a standard American diet to any diet, you're going to get some mental clarity. And there's a lot of claims made around how it's good for brain function or whatever, but really all that research comes from this epilepsy study. And there's a lot of things that are good for epilepsy that you're not going to want to do day to day. And so you get these short-term gains, but long-term, you're going to end up running into troubles. Like these children who we've studied for a long time now, when they start growing a bit, they run into severe malnutrition, growth stunting, they get convulsions. There's all these other issues that come along with it. So marketing it as some kind of safe long-term strategy or some weight loss strategy is really nonsense, since for weight loss anyway, a research study done just about a year ago called the Broad Study or the Broad Study found that a plant-based diet was the most effective weight loss diet they've ever had that did not mandate any exercise or calorie restriction. And then the last thing about the keto diet I want to talk about is blood sugar management, because with blood sugar, if you're not taking in any carbohydrates, you don't expect your blood sugar to rise. So if you're on a ketogenic diet, yeah, your labs are going to look good. Your blood tests are going to look like you're not diabetic, but you still are, because diabetes is defined as carbohydrate intolerance. And how on earth do you know if you're still carbohydrate intolerant or not if you're not eating carbohydrates? It makes no sense. So what you're doing is you're actually adding to the problem, because insulin resistance is caused by the buildup of fat in muscle and liver tissues. Tissues where fat isn't supposed to be. And so what you're doing is you're further clogging up the drain. You're just not flushing the toilet, so you don't see that there's any problem there.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, thanks.
And so,
I literally just made that up on the spot.
That was really good. I think people need that analogy because they get confused with all the science behind it and they don't have a good understanding of how our body systems work. And it is complicated, but, you know, this is something that we should all be teaching people in school, isn't it? We don't really get a lot of education on that unless it's extra beyond high school education, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference between the keto and the paleo diet?
A ketogenic diet, if done properly, puts you into a state of ketosis where you're using fat as fuel. And for some reason, people think that means you're burning all this fat that you stored, but really you're burning all the fat that you're eating. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But a paleo diet is more, they include more whole grains, and I would say it's definitely a better option to keto, especially for long term. But they're still having quite a bit of the animal products, and they recommend against fruits because of, you know, fear of sugars and whatnot. But, I mean, if you look at our actual paleo ancestors, they were primarily plant-based anyway, so the whole kind of idea of a paleo diet is a little out the window.
Well, let's talk about the sugars and the fruits now. This is something that is quite controversial. Is it good or bad to have fruit?
So, to quote Dr. Garth Davis, if you ever have a doctor tell you not to eat fruit, then get a new doctor,
mm-hmm.
because the science is very clear. There is no study ever that's linked fruit consumption, whole fruit consumption, I'm not talking about juices here, to diabetes. In fact, the Global Burden of Disease study, which was the largest study of its kind back in 2012, involved 500 researchers, over 300 institutions in 50 countries with like 100,000 data sources, so just massive, massive study. They found that the number one thing that's killing us is our diet, you know, no surprise there, but the number one dietary risk factor for premature death was not eating enough vegetables, was not eating too much processed meat or red meat. It was actually not eating enough fruit, because we live in such a fruit-phobic society. People are afraid of it. But when you eat fruit, it's got the sugar, but it's packaged with all of these phytonutrients and all the fiber, you actually don't get these huge blood sugar spikes. And like I mentioned already, the true cause of insulin resistance is fat intake, and primarily saturated fat intake.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're just running out of time. I could talk to you forever and just pick your brain on everything you learned at Boucher. I really wish I'd taken that course myself. It's so fascinating. But before we let you go, can I get you to offer our listeners, the new vegans, your favorite resources for people in their where they're at right now?
Yeah, so for the new vegans, if you want a great meal plan, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, pcrm.org/kickstart. They have a 21-day Kickstarter every month where they have meal plans for the whole 3 weeks, and they're all very healthy, whole foods, plant-based meal plans, and it's all free. It's on their website. They also have an app that's called 21-Day Vegan Kickstart, so that's definitely something to check out. If you want to learn more about the science behind diet and especially plant-based nutrition, then I recommend nutritionfacts.org, which is a site that you've already mentioned, and I'm a volunteer for as well. And then if you want documentaries looking at the health aspects, Forks Over Knives and What the Health are probably my two favorites there. And if you are a reader and you want to read about all the science, How Not to Die is probably my favorite book in that realm.
That's by Dr. Michael Greger, who runs NutritionFacts.org. He's incredible. We've had him on the show, actually.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Matthew Negra, soon to be naturopath, opening up somewhere here in Vancouver. I have a list of clients to be sending you. Please keep us posted on where you end up settling. I'm sure that your patient load will fill up very quickly.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations on all your work.
Thanks. And I'm glad you're doing all the work you are.
Thanks, Matthew. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Animal Voices Radio on CFRO 100.5 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us next week, Friday, January 4th at noon, for our New Year's show. We will be featuring an interview with two inspiring vegan animal rights activists, Sean and Dan Muskalek from Naramata, BC. They'll be telling us about their inspiring vegan journey and about the Christmas miracle of several newborn calves from the dairy industry who were rescued last week from an Abbotsford farm and have been transported to sanctuaries to live out their lives in peace. We hear from Animal Voices, want to hear from you online. Contact us or listen to past shows at animalvoices.org or follow us on Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith, and remember to be kind to the animals.
What she came for. and she's buying a stairway to heaven. There's a sign on the wall, but she wants to be sure, 'cause you know sometimes words have to mean. In a tree by the brook, there's a songbird who sings. Sometimes all of our thoughts are misguided. I look